Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, October 14th, 2016. Riek Machar is demanding regime change in South Sudan.
We as SPLA-IO, or SPLM-SPLA-IO, we need to reorganize ourselves to stage a popular armed resistance against the government, because there is no other solution we see now.
And Kenyan lawmakers are threatening to ban South Sudanese leaders accused of corruption from maintaining expensive homes in Kenya.
We must also look at sanctions targeted at those people who are involved in the fighting, who are involved in the financing, who are involved in, you know, this ethnic killings. And many of those people are living in Kenya. Many of those people are living in Addis. Many of those people are living in Khartoum. And this must end immediately.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's former first vice president says his group wants to implement the August peace agreement. Riek Machar says he can only discuss a return to peace with President Salva Kiir if members of the South Sudan army stop attacking civilians in villages across the country. He says if President Kiir does not accept a peaceful resolution to the conflict, the SPLM-IO will use force.
We as SPLA-IO, or SPLM-SPLA-IO, we need to reorganize ourselves to stage a popular armed resistance against the government, and that including changing it, because there is no other solution we see now.
The partners to the peace agreement, including the members of the IGAD Plus, have issued a statement denouncing that option you are looking for, where you say you want to change the regime by force. They are denouncing that, saying South Sudan does not need war. South Sudan needs a peaceful dialogue. How do you react to that?
I believe that these are double standards. There is war going on in South Sudan since the 8th of July. They all know it. In Equatoria, people are up in arms. There is fighting. See what is happening on the Juba Nimuli Road. See what's happening. Juba Torid Road. Juba Yei Road. In Western Equatoria, the same. And if you go to Bahar Ghazal, it is continuing. In Bahar Ghazal, it never stopped even. Even during the 2 months I was there in Juba. Fighting was on, and I used to complain. Why is it that the SPLA is attacking the SPLA-IO in Bahar Ghazal and in Equatoria? Because Salva did not want cantonment of forces in those areas. And in Upper Nile, after the Juba J1 dogfight, war flared up. I'm not starting a new war. It was started by Salva before that. I am surprised when they don't read the things correctly. They should read things correctly. There is war in South Sudan. The fact that President Salva appointed Taban, who is a conspirator with him, as first vice president, doesn't stop the war. The SPLA-IO.
How do you react to the point that he replaced you with one of your chief negotiator, one of your top member of the SPLM-IO?
When we formed the government, Taban was minister of mining. He didn't like it. He did not hide it. He decided immediately to resign from being chief negotiator, from being a member of JMAC, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. He resigned. I tried to persuade him not to resign, but he refused. He started plotting because he wanted to be Minister of Petroleum. After the J1 dogfight, and after we knew of his plot, I consulted with some members of the Politburo. The general consensus was that he should be removed, because first he abstained himself after he resigned from being chief negotiator. He was not attending the SPLM-SPLA-IO political bureau meetings. He was working now with the SPLM, the other part of the SPLM led by President Salva. And when fighting erupted, it became very clear that he has joined the other side.
Let's talk about the issues of peace in the country now. From Khartoum, we expected you to return to the country, but you went to South Africa. When are you going back to Juba?
There is war going on, John Tanzo, you know that. If I go to Juba, we need to discuss it. There must be a political dialogue to discuss what happened. What were our differences in Juba? Last year, I went to the UN telling them that there were outstanding issues that we need to discuss, violations which were done by the president after he signed the peace agreement.
Are you hopeful that you will sit back on the table with the President Kiir and talk about issues of South Sudan?
Well, a solution must be got. And I told you I met President Museveni. He was trying to float some ideas as member of IGAD and also as a head of the state in the region concerned. I thanked him for his concern, but there must be these issues must be discussed. What's the way forward? To us, we have said there must be a political initiative, which would mean a political dialogue of how to resuscitate the peace agreement. If it is not that, what do? We reorganize ourselves and continue defending ourselves. We are actually resisting because we're being fought. And the rest are saying they are condemning us for defending ourselves.
That's Riek Machar, former first vice president in the transitional government of national unity. He was speaking to VOA's John Tanza from Johannesburg, South Africa, yesterday. Lawmakers in Kenya are considering the possibility of imposing sanctions on South Sudanese politicians and warlords accused of war profiteering and other types of corruption. The sanctions would include travel bans and a freeze on assets. Waki Simon Wudu has the details from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The Kenyan lawmakers believe the threat of sanctions will force President Salva Kiir and former first vice president Riek Machar to end the violence in the country. The lawmakers say the ongoing fighting in South Sudan has affected development in Kenya. At a news conference in Nairobi this week, the National Committee on Defense and Security in the Kenyan Parliament said South Sudanese leaders must get serious about ending the conflict in their country. Dungu Ngethenzi chairs the Kenya's Defense Committee in Parliament. Ngethenzi says the proposed sanctions would target individuals blocking the road to peace.
We must also look at sanctions targeted at those people who are involved in the fighting, who are involved in the financing, who are involved in, you know, this ethnic killings in their country. And many of those people are living in Kenya. Many of those people are living in Addis. Many of those people are living in Khartoum. And this must end immediately. They may no longer enjoy having their assets in our country and their children studying in our schools.
Ngethenzi says Kenya and the rest of Africa cannot afford to have another failed state like Somalia. The sanctions will include travel bans and the freezing of assets of political leaders engaged in corruption. The move comes amid increasing reports of violence in several parts of South Sudan, which has forced at least 1 million people to recently flee the country for neighboring Uganda, Kenya, and Ethiopia. The U.S.-based human rights group called The Sentry recently released a report implicating senior South Sudanese leaders, including President Kiir and Machar, in a year of war profiteering. The Sentry report alleges that the leaders have looted the country's resources to enrich themselves by buying expensive houses in Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, and Australia. Asman Kamama is the chairperson of the Security Committee in Kenya's parliament. He says the governance structure of South Sudan must be inclusive.
We want fairness to all the people of Southern Sudan. So the President Salva Kiir should ensure that all the people, whether they're in Jonglei, whether they're in the unity state, whether they're in all the southern side, all of them should be treated fairly so that they're also not encouraged to really feel that they are being discriminated against.
Kamama says South Sudanese have suffered for far too long.
We want the people of Southern Sudan to ensure that the way forward is not the way of becoming a refugee or a soldier. Because from 1983 In southern Sudan, people are either in the bush as soldiers, even child soldiers, or they are refugees in Kenya or in Uganda or also in Ethiopia. So that life, they must change from that life and ensure that they go back and build their country.
Mabior Garang heads the National Secretariat of Information in the SPLM-IO faction led by Riek Machar. He says trouble bans and asset freezes will not bring peace to South Sudan.
It will not address the root causes of conflict in South Sudan. A better thing to discuss would be an arms embargo on South Sudan, because when the weapons which are being used to kill people of South Sudan come through the territories of Kenya and Uganda.
Akol Paul Kordit is the South Sudan Deputy Minister of Information. He says Kenya should pass a bill that bars South Sudanese politicians from using Kenya for destabilizing South Sudan.
We have bilateral relations, and if there's anything, I think there are more appropriate ways through bilateral communication where they can communicate this to us, and we'll definitely take it up and see what the two governments can do.
Akim Gatkek is a South Sudanese residing in Kenya. He wants Kenya to mediate between the government and the various groups opposing the Kiir's administration.
If people want peace, sanction is not the solution for the peace. The only solution for the peace is to negotiate and bring these people together. If you want to do sanction, it may not reflect to most of South Sudanese leaders, because most of them don't even have bank accounts. Some of them don't even have homes outside country, especially those military leaders.
Titus Gadluak is another South Sudanese living in Kenya. He welcomes sanctions but says they should target individuals accused of fueling the violence.
If there could be a local tribunal in South Sudan, that can be better now, because who will they sanction? First of all, you can go to the root cause of the war. Then after that, you sanction the one that enforced the war.
For decades, Kenya has hosted tens of thousands of South Sudanese refugees who fled their country and reside in refugee camps in northwestern Kenya. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
The ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement is urging its party members who have joined splinter groups to return home and prepare for the 2018 elections. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Deng Mading says the SPLM ruling party is a democratic party which gives opportunity for every South Sudanese to contribute his or her ideas. Mading says the SPLM is a revolutionary party that is being threatened by opposition politicians in the government of national unity.
There is no way this country will be surrendering itself to dark forces. It is only through democracy where we have a peaceful transition of power from a generation to a generation. There is no way that we can do it through the bullet of the guns. It will be through the ballot box, through the Southern Sudan people. Votes. So we need to respect our voters.
Mading says members of the SPLM in Juba still believe in good governance, democracy, accountability, and the rule of law. He says all members of the party who are against the Kiir administration are welcome to contribute ideas and reform the party, a right that is protected under a previous agreement.
We have already Arusha. So the FDs and the SPLM-IO are covered in the Arusha agreement. Because in that Arusha agreement, the SPLM, wherever they are united under the Arusha agreement. And that Arusha agreement, we have put it in the, it is incorporated in the constitution of the SPLM. Therefore, whether they like it or not, they are covered by the Arusha agreement and they are SPLM.
He says the 2018 proposed elections is an opportunity for South Sudanese to elect leaders through the ballot, not by force.
If the SPLM is a majority in the parliament, then they will have a right now to form the government, not the government of national unity. It will be the government of the people, elected by the people and for the people and by the people. So that is what is going to happen. 2018 is going to fix the whole problem of SPLM.
The SPLM was formed in 1983 and the party waged war for 22 years against the Khartoum-based government. Factions of the party split into the SPLM in opposition and the SPLM former detainees after fighting broke out in late 2013 A fragile peace agreement signed by the warring parties in 2015 proposed general elections in 2018 that would lead to the peaceful transition of power in the country. However, the future of 2018 general elections in the country is unclear because of reports of ongoing fighting across the country. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. While state officials accuse former state officials of damaging state property. More on that story when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you noticing any effect of climate change where you live?
Yeah, I have where I live. I live in Monuki and in Juba, South Sudan. And I have noticed that the sun is hotter than it was, though. I don't know whether it's because of bush burning or deforestation.
Yes, for instance, in my country, Ghana, this year the Harmattan had lasted for over 1 month.
Now the rains do last longer and they rain more heavier. And the sun burns much more. And the periods which we know are normally for the rainy season sometimes comes and there's nothing.
According to the information that I get, people say there is a bit of changes. It is not much hotter than it used to be. So I don't know whether it's changing positively or negatively.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A Wau state spokesman says former Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan and his finance minister are responsible for deliberately damaging government property and blames him for missing government assets. Governor Hassan denies the accusations, as we hear from Michael Atit in Juba.
Wau Minister of Information Bona Gaudencio says furniture is missing from the governor's official residence. Gaudencio says state officials are shocked to see government offices vandalized.
I'm surprised with some damages have been caused from our former governor. The state's house, which is the governor's house, have been damaged. If you have seen, these are not our ethics in SPLM. And also we have just surprised from our former Minister of Finance. She have caused a damage in the House of Finance.
The minister says the SPLM secretariat has formed a joint committee to investigate. He says once the report is released, the state will summon former senior state officials to answer the charge in court.
It was very serious damages and will cost the government a lot. Even government will be have problem just to renovate these houses. We cannot just be in a hurry because we got the serious damages.
Rizik Zakaria Hassan, the former governor of Western Barra Ghazal, is the current governor of the newly established Lol State and flatly denies the accusations. Hassan says he handed over all state property to his successor, Elias Waya, and he says he has the records to prove it.
There are two files. One file, we are holding it, and the other file is in the custodian of Wau. Instead of accusing me or drawing accusation between us, let them go on and check the file. If there is any observation on that file, they can talk about it.
Hassan became governor of Lol State late last year. He says if there was any case against him, the former governor would have asked him about it at that time.
If they have any observation, they should consult me direct. The governor should ask me direct. Then why, if there is any damages in the state house, why don't they wait till now?
Former Finance Minister Lilian Valentino Rizik was not available for comment. 30-year-old Wau Town resident Joseph Henry says all government assets are not accounted for because of mismanagement in the state.
Government assets in various institutions do not belong to one person. They belong to the public. No one should have a right to destroy them as they like. The government is supposed to have a committee overseeing these things, and if an official spends money from his or her personal money, it should be reimbursed accordingly. But it's not good to destroy it.
President Kiir unilaterally created 28 states out of the original 10 regional states in late December 2015. International observers, including IGAD, said The move violates the 2015 peace agreement signed by Mr. Kiir and SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A group of people with disabilities from Jonglei State staged a protest against their state lawmaker, accusing him of failing to meet the needs of deaf and blind people. The group's leader says people with disabilities should have access to learning and jobs. Jacob Achek has this report for VOA from Boer.
On Wednesday, more than 70 disabled people marched from the town's market to the office of the governor, where they hand over a petition to State Governor Philip Aguer, speaking in the Dinka language. David Chuti Madit, who is the state branch of the National Association of the Disabled in Jonglei State, says their priority is getting an education center, an office built for the disabled.
The blind, deaf and lame are disappointed. We are residents of this land. Those who can hear are allowed to go to school, while the blind and deaf are being chased away. What is the reason? The blind and deaf want to be educated so that they learn and are equal with those people seated. They say they don't want Honorable Deng Ajiang Duot in office.
Deng Ajiang Duot was appointed in 2012 by former Governor Kwal Manyang Juk to represent people with disabilities in the State Assembly. Disabled people says the MP is only concerned about war disabled group. They say their MP has failed to interact with NGOs, including those representing children who need help. Disabled graduate Adiar Jong Biur says more than 14,000 people with disabilities from Jonglei State lack access to education. Speaking in Dinka, Biur says people with disabilities are being intimidated in the community due to their physical inability, even though they are competent to work.
I graduated in Juba University, and when I came and searched for jobs, they say there is no disabled person who study education while disabled, that the education is for elderly people. We are looking for employment. That is what we want.
Former Education Minister Tut Kwong, who was replaced by Susan Lisa Luong, left an operational cost of more than £838,000 for Boer, Twitch East and Duke counties. Officials say they did not know where the money has gone. Agona Lirlik, an advisor to the governor, says Governor Aguirre will receive the petition from the disabled community and will make a statement on Monday.
This petition which they are presenting to the governor of Jonglei State is pertaining to some of the demands from different institutions. One of them is for sure the Minister of Education, War and Disabled Commission.
MP Deng Ajiang Duot declined to comment on this story. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Boer.
Hundreds of people living with HIV in Torit took part in a forum organized by the South Sudan Network for People Living with the Virus. The participants tell VOA's Dimo Silva Arrelo that the South Sudan AIDS Commission should carry out more awareness programs to help people living with HIV and AIDS.
Most participants at today's forum were women who have been receiving antiretroviral drugs since 2011. The drugs do not kill or cure the virus, but when taken together at the same time, they can prevent the growth of the virus. People living with HIV/AIDS in Torit say many of their colleagues have been cut off from the centers where they access HIV drugs. The group blames insecurity and the stigma attached to the disease as some of the challenges facing HIV patients in South Sudan. Akaya Moga is one of those attending today's mobilization forum. She says it is very difficult for her to get supplies of antiretroviral drugs.
Some of us are staying very far deep in the village, and to come to get your drugs is difficult because of insecurity and even means of transport. And also the drugs we are taking is more strong, which needs a lot of food. And again, it is difficult for us to get food these days.
Betty Sebastian is a resident of Tori Town. She says she has been getting her drugs on time, but she faces a different problem. She says since she was tested positive, her husband divorced her.
Husband and a wife, they are always breaking down because of HIV. Once a woman is tested positive, you find the relationship in marriage is broken. So it is really a challenge for at least every woman who is tested positive.
Sebastian wants lawmakers to enact laws to protect women who are HIV positive.
You find if a woman is tested positive, the man is negative. So it's like the law can just say you quit the woman. But if a woman is tested negative and the husband is tested positive, you find people force that woman to be with the husband so that with time the woman also gets HIV.
The Society of Tori People Living with HIV says they want financial support so that they can encourage people who are HIV positive to show up and get drugs on time. Okaimo John is one of those living with HIV. He says, unlike women, many men are unwilling to admit they are HIV positive. John says the forum is encouraging people living with the virus to seek medical attention.
In order to minimize this kind of discrimination, we will still go from home to home, always from villages to villages, to mobilize this kind of people, put them in groups so that we see how we can help ourselves. Because vulnerability is always there and poverty is always there. But you may find that SPLHIV, when we come all together, it will give us a way forward of developing some of the income-generating activities so that we can put something little for food on the table.
Habib Dafala is the Director General for Program Coordination at the South Sudan HIV and AIDS Commission. He says the Global Fund for HIV/AIDS, which was formed in 2015, helps thousands of HIV-positive people across the country. But Dafala says insecurity is affecting the work of the commission in South Sudan.
Most of the people living positive who have been on treatment are not people that can easily afford to fly from one place to another, and therefore they have to travel by road. Of course, even around the eastern Equatorial States areas, some of the roads right now are out of bound because of insecurity. So this is a major challenge to us. It is a challenge in the sense that then it affects the level of consistency with which we expect the people on treatment, you know, to continue, say, with their treatment services. And of course, as a result, you know, their health situation deteriorates.
Dafala says some 193,000 people are living with HIV in South Sudan. According to the 2015 Spectrum Data Estimation by the Ministry of Health, South Sudan HIV Commission, and Health Partners. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
And with that report from Torit, we finish our show to this Friday. We leave you with a traditional Baka song from Maridi State. We've been listening to a traditional Baka song from Maridi State. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. All of us here at South Sudan in Focus hope you have a peaceful weekend. Join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.